Greetings, I'm James Gillen, your host, and welcome to As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network. We've got going to have a great show. We've got Michael Tellinger, and you know, we talk a lot on this program on why our current political and social system isn't working and the separation that is created by the struggle and divisiveness of our political parties, not to mention the influence of the Archon Network the hold that the big corporations have on our quality of life. And many of you know there's been a better way, you know, but we're not sure where to start. And one way to lessen the chaos from the old structure collapsing, which is what most of us want, is to have another option in place. And my guest today, Michael Tellinger, has that other option, and he's been working very hard on this Ubuntu project, which is amazing. And I'd like to share a little bit about Michael's vision. And he says, only by understanding our mysteries in the past, the origins of money, and the rise of royal bloodlines, can we make sense of where we're heading today, why life is so hard, and why we have to struggle so much to stay alive. Michael Tellinger presents a model for a new social structure called contributionism, a world without money, based on the African philosophy of Ubuntu. And he proposes how we should move from a money-driven society to a society driven by people, their talents, and their passion for life, where everyone contributes their natural talents, you know, acquired skills, and the greatest benefit of all in their community. And money has no meaning. You know, Tellinger has been one of the leading activists against the banking cartels in South Africa since 2010, and his personal experiences in the High Court has helped him to expose the unlawful and corrupt banking sector. Ubuntu Contributionism, a blueprint for human prosperity, was released in February in 2014, and it contains detailed information and guidelines how humanity can achieve utopia on this beautiful planet of abundance, and simply by cooperating and not competing. I'm delighted to announce Michael is going to be coming back to ESETI in June for a hands-on workshop teaching the first steps in setting up contribution community. I'd like to welcome my good friend Michael Tellinger back to the program. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, James. Good to hear your voice, my friend.
Yeah, it's always great to hear you. I know you've had some challenges. I don't know where you want to start, on this. I know we've both been going through the same process, you know, and, first of all, I guess you kind of want to focus on the Ubuntu movement and how that's going.
Yeah, thanks, James. First of all, I want to say, while you mentioned the word challenges, you know, before we even start talking about that, I need to report that the Ubuntu movement and the Ubuntu party as a political front or a wedge for it on the political platform is growing so quickly and exponentially that we can no longer control it in so many ways. It's got an energy and a life of its own where people around the world are embracing it. It's resonating within their hearts, and it's just exploding. And we've just been in the UK elections only in two constituencies, but that was a start. We planted the seeds of the Ubuntu contributionism consciousness into the UK political beast, and it's there. It'll always be remembered as a starting point. And that's just 1 year after we participated, and exactly 1 year on the 7th of May, after we participated with the Ubuntu Party in South Africa in the parliamentary elections. So this thing is just growing out of control. When I say out of control, in a positive way. And I guess they're also the possibilities of being infiltrated and undermined, which we need to talk about in great detail as well, and how to avoid that. But the good news is that in our little town of Waterval-Boerfen, that many of the people that follow us on the website and what we're doing here, our community projects and our volunteer projects, and specifically the actions of the Ubuntu Party, has just exploded, because through our community projects that we've initiated over the last year and a half, we have received so much support from the community, and they've embraced not only what we're doing, but me, I guess, in many ways. Wherever I go, they just call me Ubuntu. You know, it's staggering. You know, and you're dealing with, you know, typical African, almost squatter camps, if you want to call them that. You know, informal settlements and villages where people live really very basically, and a lot of them live in tin shacks and very small basic homes. And when I walk or drive through this part of our town, or what's known as the township, most of the people, they already know me as the Ubuntu guy.
Uh-huh.
And this has all been done in 1 year. So the feedback is so positive and overwhelming that it's almost impossible to get it across in a short interview and a short chat. You'd really have to come here and feel it. But at the same, and also just to add, the support we have on the political front, where many of the people that were previously representing the ruling party, the ANC, and the official opposition party, which is known as the DA here, they are starting to move over to the Ubuntu party and stand as political representatives for next year's local municipal elections, which is just, I mean, unimaginable. And this is happening right across South Africa. You know, I'm struggling to manage it with all the other things that I have to do and the balls I'm juggling and traveling around the world. Mm-hmm. It's become really tiring. And, you know, as I'm talking to you, I'm trying to sound as upbeat as possible, but I'm really suffering from extreme exhaustion and fatigue. Because
I can totally relate to that one. I know exactly where you're coming from.
So just I want to give the people that are going to be listening to this the good news. Everything is really going so well that I almost struggle to find the words to describe it. Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, I know we were talking earlier about some of the challenges, and I think we should talk about this because other people are going to come up against the same things. And I've talked to about three or four people that have communities that are going through this incredible transition and challenges. And a lot of it's just because, you know, some people just aren't ready yet, you know, to let things go, you know, and move into that mindset, you know, and you know, other people have been raised a certain way where they may have a grand sense of entitlement and think the world owes them something, and they haven't gotten into that service, or they have a lot of childhood issues they haven't processed, and that's throughout all of society. It's amazing how many people are acting out their unprocessed childhood, you know, programs, you know, even through every aspect of society, even through government as well.
Absolutely. Well, one of the challenges we've had here is, you know, blending a little business, which has really been, instead of sustaining us, I've had to keep the little business alive from the proceeds of the sales of my book and the money that I make on traveling around the world doing presentations. And the business is really keeping the Ubuntu office open. You're running a little coffee shop and a small little restaurant known as the Stone Circle Bistro, and then the backpackers that we recently added to it, and which was really also serving as the place where our volunteers were staying when they came to join us over the last year and a half, or just less than a year and a half, and the Stone Circle Museum, my ancient artifacts, where all the ancient tools and artifacts are on display. Which is a really very basic, small, you know, converted garage that is as nice as we could make it with the limited funds that I've had. To merge and blend that with the home of Ubuntu and use that as the platform to launch the community project into the greater town and community, and merging that and then inviting volunteers from all over the world to come work with us to launch and manage some of these community projects. And that has been an incredible learning curve for us since February 2014, when our first volunteers started arriving. And we've learned so much from that. The most important lessons we've learned are that not all these volunteers that arrive here are of the same mind as we are. You know, they arrive here with preconceived ideas. Many of them have not even read the Ubuntu book or really gone through the philosophy of Ubuntu on our websites. And they arrive here thinking that we need help with planning a strategy where that's not the help we need. We need help with implementing the Ubuntu strategy and philosophy. And there's a huge difference between those two applications.
Yeah. So, Well, it's kind of like it's kind of like a bit of arrogance, you know, to come. They should come in and they. It's weird, you know. They kind of think they know better, you know, and they have a better way of doing it or anything, and they haven't really settled into the wisdom that's already there, and the wisdom through experience that this works, this doesn't work, and what's interesting is that they've always wanted to do it their way or this new way, and you go, well, we already did that, but we found out that didn't work, you know, but they're hell bent on doing it, and then you have to pay in the end when it doesn't work, you know. It's kind of an amazing situation.
That's exactly what happened here on several fronts in various of the projects that we launched, is where we put some of the volunteers in to help run it and manage it the way that we've planned it, and they start changing it, and without any consultation or discussion, and start, as you say, doing it their way because they think they know better because they come from Europe or America or Australia or, you know, and they just think because, you know, we need help with planning and creating, coming up with a plan, as I said, instead of implementing the plan that we asked them to do. And this then becomes a big problem because then it becomes a discussion about, this should be discussed and this should be by consensus. And then I have to explain to them, hold on, no, this is not for discussion. We invited you to come and help us implement our plan, not to discuss developing the plan. And they say, oh, but that's not Ubuntu. And then they start lecturing me about what Ubuntu is and what Ubuntu isn't, and then becomes a whole ego thing. And then if I don't want to listen to how they want to change things, they say, oh, you're just a dictator, and then they run off. And then they start their own projects, completely splitting the united activity of what we started to do. So by trying to service their ego and wanting to do what they want to do because they want to be seen as helping the community. And every single time this has happened, they have just divided our community, caused division and confusion. And then I have to go back and fix it and patch it up again after they leave. So it's just been a real turbulent time and a very steep learning curve for us how to deal with volunteers. Mm-hmm. So I now understand in future that right now we can, and this is why we stopped the volunteer program, until we actually have figured out how to implement the community projects with people from our own community who actually understand what it is that we're doing and don't have foreign Eurocentric or USA-centric ideas.
Yeah.
And our own people from our own community then start to manage and control these community projects and then bring the volunteers in to say, right, this is what your job is. This is what you got to do. We wake up in the morning and you go and do this and you shovel this crap or you move this or you carry this or you dig this hole. That's what you do. You're here to help, not to come and develop a new strategy. Uh-huh. Until we have created this integrated community project chain, because this is what is key, and this is what each and every one of these volunteers, as I said, many of them haven't even read the Ubuntu philosophy or what we stand for. They just think they want to come and help, you know, and because they feel that their help is going to be very unique and so forth. I must say that we have had incredible people, but I'd say about 50% of the people we've had actually ended up causing more damage to us and to our community projects than helping us. And this is why we eventually had to just stop the volunteer program. I forgot where I was going with that now, but...
I fully, being in the same position, I fully understand, you know, what you've been going through. I know a lot of us, and I've talked to several other people that have retreat centers or things of that nature, and they're building places that are community and close to the land and things like that, and it's overall, it's kind of like the same story. It's kind of interesting that, you know, it goes through several stages. It starts out great, you know, I want to help, I want to volunteer, and then, you know, that works for a little while, and then it moves into a little bit of a power struggle where they start, you know, moving into a position of power, well, I'm special, you know, I have this, I have that. And sometimes there's like drugs and alcohol involved, maybe abuse of that. And then next thing you know,
absolutely. Yeah. I've got to just, while you brought that up, it's unfortunately, I don't know why, drugs and alcohol has been the scourge of our volunteers. And you know, we made it very, very clear, you know, no smoking dope on our premises, no drugs on our premises, because you can understand that at the moment already the Ubuntu movement is under scrutiny. And that's the first thing they will do. They'll send the drug squad into our place and they'll raid our place. And if they find any drugs, I'm going to go to jail because it's my place. So I made it very clear. And irrespective of the rules that we lay down, they just don't listen. I mean, they were at one stage, they were growing dope in the place. I had to go and throw out, you know, dope plants, like hundreds of dope seedlings growing everywhere that we had to get rid of. And I just couldn't understand that they do not understand that simple principle, that they're endangering the entire movement.
Yeah. I can hear you. We went through the same thing here. It's just like, oh my God, you know, and we're under huge scrutiny. I mean, the same thing. They've been wanting to shut down USETI for a long time, and we've had all these court cases and everything, had to go to court like 10 times. It was just insane. But you know, got through that, but you know, you don't want to give them ammunition. You don't want to say, and especially in our case, you know, we've got all these UFOs flying over, we're documenting them. The last thing we want people to say is, oh, those guys are all stoned. You know, they're either drunk or stoned and seeing imaginary things and stuff like that. So we have to have a very strong, you know, no drug policy, just for that reason, and also for all the problems that come with it and that can come with it if the authorities decide, hey, we're going to come in and close this place down.
Well, you know what, just on the alcohol side, that became a huge problem for us here. You know, I built a beautiful little African thatch, what do we call a lapa here, next to the river. And that's supposed to be like a chill-out bar where people go and hang out with nice, chilled music by the river, look at the mountains, drink a good glass of wine, have some good conversation. And that became like a party place and a place where everybody would go down and get stoned and take drugs and invite other people to party every night, loud music until 3 o'clock in the morning until the neighbors complain. And that's just not what we want. You know, this is not what building a community is all about. And some of the volunteers would arrive and immediately just start organizing parties. You know, like this is what we need help with, to organize parties. It's like, no, we don't need to organize parties. And then they get upset if I say, no, hold on, sorry, what's going on here? It's like, yeah, you didn't come here to organize parties. You came here to help us with community projects and developing communities.
Become daddy, you know, you become daddy that withheld everything from them when they're whatever, you know. It's like unbelievable. Yeah. It's that then that program, because I know there's an incredible resistance to authority, and then some people haven't finished their childhood issues with dad or mom or whatever. And so you got the both, you know, the resistance to authority, and then it puts you in a position of being the enforcer, which I'm sure you hate. You know, I do. Yeah. I hate being in that position, but you know, you have no choice because the bigger picture needs to be honored and, you know, respected.
And then the other thing that really got to us. I mean, we are still trying to get over the invasion and infiltration of 2014, when Louise and I left for our tour last year, this time after the elections, and these volunteers moved into the Ubuntu village, our home base, the bistro, and they took it over. They took it over, and they made people believe that they did this with our blessing. As you may recall, I had to write emails to my database, and they started using my Ubuntu database to email people around the world that they've taken over, that they've removed me, and they'll bring me back at the appropriate time. Complete infiltration of the Ubuntu movement, setting up a dummy Ubuntu website, starting to raise funds with the Ubuntu logo and the Ubuntu philosophy into their Dutch bank account.
Wow.
And this was a complete infiltration and fraud against the Ubuntu movement and against me and the Ubuntu party. And it took us quite a while to make them stop while we were traveling around the world on our tour. And that's not over. Those same people are still in our town, still trying to divide our community, trying to create projects of their own because they know better. And and they came here. They came here to work with Ubuntu. They came here because of me, I guess, to start off with, and supporting me. And then within the first 2 weeks, they thought they knew better, and they just tried to take over completely. I mean, it's pure fraud.
Yeah.
And just recently, just before we actually shut down the volunteer programs, we had three of our volunteers just within 3 weeks, within 4 weeks of arriving again. And I was so excited about some of these people. I mean, the one guy is a master wood carpenter and so forth, and he already started teaching some of the youngsters carpentry with the tools that I provided. I provided a whole wood cutting sawmill that we've been given to provide wood for the community. And so that started, and before I knew, this guy started doing deals behind my back with some of the people that own farms who want to turn them into Ubuntu farms down the road from us. They, him and these Dutch people that last year tried to take over the Ubuntu movement started doing deals behind my back with the guy that was already talking to me about turning his farm into an Ubuntu farm. They try to convince him to sign contracts with them and let them run it their way. And then he came to me and said, "What's going on? These guys are making me sign contracts and so forth." And I went, "What?" So I called them in and I said, "What's going on here?" And then the answer was, "Well, you know, I'm not just here to help Ubuntu. I'm here looking for opportunities for myself." So I went, "Oh, wow. Wow, this is amazing. So I think this is a good time for you to get up and leave right now, you know?"
Yeah. Did he take the sawmill with him? I'm just curious.
Did he take what?
The sawmill and the tools with him?
No, the sawmill is ours, you know. But
well, I know,
now,
but that usually doesn't stop them from because they worked with it and they used it. Now it's theirs, you know.
Now it's theirs. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So with that, I mean, I've had to replace tools so many times, drills and saws and spades and forks. I mean, all kinds of, you know, brush cutters. I mean, just I have to keep replacing it because people just keep taking it away and just keeps disappearing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
same. Yeah, we have the same issue here. You know, I go on a hunt, you know. Yeah, you know, after the snows melt off, I go for a hunt for tools, and you find everything that was left out and buried, and you know, half your tools, and even my own personal tools were out in the, you know, buried underneath the snow. So
but
it's I don't know what it is. It's just like it's something. I think if you haven't really worked for things and bought things in the past, you don't have any respect for them or something. You know, And so if you always used, you know, everybody else's stuff, you didn't really have to work or buy it, then automatically it's just disposable or something, some weird mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's definitely a part of it.
And then you get a lecture on why are you so attached to material things, and, you know, you get that lecture. I'm sure you got that one. And I just said, well, you know, if you are conscious, you want to get the most bang out of your tools you can. Because it takes a lot of power and energy and resources to make those tools, so why not you know make them last as long as you can? You know, that's just base common sense.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey of discovery and learning for us. But I must tell you that it was absolutely necessary. The last 16 months were absolutely necessary, because without that, we'd still be possibly going down the wrong path. Now I know exactly what we need to do into the future to prevent this from happening. And the most important thing here is that, and you will know this very well because you've been doing this longer than we have here, is is that the moment you open yourself up to volunteers, your home, your office, I mean, these guys moved into a house. They used my car. They used, I mean, it was unbelievable. They just completely took over our lives, you know?
I can top that, but I guess I don't know how far I want to go into that. But yeah, I had two vehicles pretty much, you know, ruined, and then given a lecture on why I'm so attached to material things. You know, even some I even asked, you know, do not drive this at all. Here's the other one, you can drive that, but you come back, and you know, it's just a long story I want to go into, but it's just unbelievable. I just, you know, I'm sure you and Louise are just kind of scratching your head going, what were they thinking? You know, why is this okay? You know, and that's what I'm just blown away, is that it's like, I don't know where to start. You know, where do you start when people just don't have the reference points, you know, or to comprehend, you know, what is sustainable? You know, what is in the highest and best good? Things like that.
Yeah, so this is why we pulled it right back. We've stopped the volunteer programs. We now understand what we need to do much more clearly than we did before. We are refocusing our energy on the existing community projects and the future community projects. And new people are suddenly emerging from within our own community that are natural leaders to manage these community projects. It's as if we've had to close that door to allow the new, our own people to step into that light, you know, and this is really exciting.
Exactly. Yeah, we did the same. We're doing the same thing here. And I find it amazing that all these people stepped up, and they're totally service oriented. You know, they're not, you know, not saying what's in it for me or much wants more mentality. They're just totally giving, and you know, everybody's just back in harmony, and it's amazing. You know, how it's like nice. I come home and I go, God, it's good to be home, and I'm greeted by smiling faces, you know, and welcome home, you know, and things like that. And it's totally changed. You know, the energy is just
that's exactly completely. And just in the last 5 days, you know, I've had a tough month, a really, really tough month. You know, I've been to Europe 3 times in 1 month. Yeah. Plus, we did a sacred sites tour of Southern Africa, which included Botswana and South Africa. We did 4,000 kilometers on a bus and with some flights. You know, it was a hectic tour from very northern Botswana, the sacred serpent site. And we had some incredibly powerful spiritual workers and healers on this tour. There were 30 of us in total. It's a big group of people to schlep around with, you know.
Oh yeah.
And it's tiring. And in between, just before that, I was in Germany. A week prior to that, I was in Macedonia on national television, and then the tour in between. Then after that, back to Germany. It was a crazy, crazy month, and so I came back and I was just fatigued and exhausted. And I walked into the Ubuntu village, our home here, the Ubuntu office, and I just felt that dark energy there.
Exactly
all the things I asked them not to do, they did in that 1 month. Everything I said, please don't do this, don't do that. You know, so I had to call a meeting and said, look, this is what happened, and this is it. This is the end of the line. You know, you're out of here. And within 24 hours, the energy lifted and went from a dark, really dark energy where you could feel it to a place that was just so light. And suddenly things were flowing again. And the moment things flow, the people start pulling in off the highway. They come in and it's, you start attracting the right kind of people that come there to discover, look at the museum, come read the Ubuntu material and have a cup of coffee and talk to me if I'm there. And it's suddenly there's a whole energy shift. It's just so exciting.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny because I can totally relate. It's almost the exact same thing happening here and other communities as well. And I talked to some shaman, you know, people that were, you know, Peruvian shamans and things like that, that are creating sacred space and sacred sites. And they had to do a huge house cleaning and clean out anybody that was, you know, abusing drugs or alcohol or just not with the program. And they said, you know, what he told me off the air after I did an interview with this guy, he said, you know, he said, there's only about 3 of us left here. He said, there used to be about 25. And, And I go, wow. I go, you're kidding. He goes, no. He said that we had to move into like an enforcement role to maintain the frequency and the energies on these sacred sites. And we had to kind of relieve a lot of people, you know, that were taking the energy down, you know, and opening up to energies that weren't conducive to that. And, you know, it's funny because it's, you know, from my perspective, which is a walk on the wild side, I know there's this Archon network and there's unseen influences. They're doing all they can to stop these movements and these light centers and things like that. And people in air open up to these influences and then they work them. They play them like a fiddle, you know, and work on all their unhealed issues and all their you know, they bring it right up to the surface and play it. It's unbelievable. But, you know, on the brighter side, what I see happening now is that you've got all this other energy coming in that which is just phenomenal. You know, you got the Star Nations coming in, you got the benevolent Anunnaki that are cleaning house and cleaning up the fallen ones, and just there's so many things happening right now on a positive level that I do really feel that, you know, we had to make some hard choices and some changes, but now there's this movement that's just gonna take off like a wildfire, you know, and that seems to be what Ubuntu is doing right now.
Yeah, this is why I'm so excited coming to the USA this year, because it's probably going to be the last year that we'll come, because we got a lot of work to do here in Southern Africa. You know, I've got on our tour of Botswana, that was just so incredible. You'll see some of the footage we'll put up on the internet soon. From the Sacred Serpent Cave in Sodilo Hills, northern Botswana. I mean, it's just south of Angola. It's just a hell of a drive to get there. You know, it took us 3 days driving to get there from Johannesburg. You know, it was just crazy. Yeah. The poor visitors from all over the world were going a bit nuts.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, it seems like, you know, kind of, you know, according to most people, everything started in Africa, you know, and this civilization. And it seems like this movement or energetically or whatever is, you know, this total, I can't think of the name, but the kind of the resurrection of Eden or whatever is also happening in Africa. It's like it's really anchoring in there strong.
Yeah, I get a sense of that. So, I mean, this is how bizarre this is, right? So we get to Tsodila Hills, I mean, in the middle of nowhere. Right, just a spectacular mountain, sacred mountain that was an Anunnaki stronghold. You know, I'll talk about this in great detail at the conference at Eseti when I get there, because the information I got from this trip was unbelievable. We also had two shamans with us, one who trained with a Hopi, who became a shaman with a Hopi shaman, who now lives in Australia, and our own very own. Dean Laprini, who is just one of the most amazing shaman in South Africa that you can meet, a white shaman. Uh-huh. And so we meet our tour guides. Our tour guides were just spectacular, together with a bush, traditional bushman, whose family lived on Sodilo Hills. And then when UNESCO took it over several years ago as a World Heritage Site, moved the families off the site. They've been living there for thousands of years. The first thing they do is move the traditional people off their traditional land. This is what UNESCO does. Wow. So our tour guides who are from Botswana, who are from Maun, very north, right on the delta, which is spectacular, they just really pissed off and they started talking about it. So I started giving them advice what they should do about UNESCO and so forth. And then they found out who I was and Ubuntu and the Ubuntu movement. And suddenly, before I realized that these guys are ready to start the Ubuntu party from Maun, which is really like the spiritual stronghold in Botswana, far more so than Gaborone, which is the capital. Gaborone is like a modern city, you know, a modern city right on the border of South Africa. Uh-huh. So you don't get that much African spirit there. But you go to Maun, which is right on the other side of Botswana, and you've got the strong African spirit there, and a lot of still the traditional Bushman spirit there that's not far from there, and it's amazing. So I'm actually thinking of taking a week off before we come to the USA and fly out to Maun and spend a week with these guys, because they want to launch the Ubuntu party there and start really activating this in Botswana. And I can tell you, if these guys go for it with the passion that we discussed, they'll have that country wrapped up within the next year.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great. I'm just seeing right now is that this old control program, it's a draconian program, and its time is up, and it's actually imploding in on itself, and there is a massive uprising going on, and I'm just hoping the rest of the world figures this out quick, before they implement all these other weird little false flag programs they've got.
Yeah. I think it's unstoppable now, and I can see it from the way the Ubuntu movement has grown. I'm just astounded. There's nothing I can do to stop it. If I wanted to stop it, it's not possible. So what we can just do is keep supporting it, and what you're doing supports what we're doing, supports what Zeitgeist movement is doing, and all. There's so many movements around the world that are doing very critical and important work in their field of influence. And the one thing that I also need to warn people against, or guard people against, is to try and unite everybody. I'm sure you get a lot of emails like I do from people say, "Oh, we should unite and start working together," and all this. That's such a futile waste of energy to start doing that, because there's so many critical, unique, focused movements doing very critical work in their area of expertise, a necessary area that they're activating energies in that specific aspect of our planet and the people that revolve around that consciousness, and they're elevating the consciousness among those group of people. So I describe it to all these people that try and say, "Well, we must all unite and work together." That'll be a complete waste of time and energy, because we are far more effective doing it as long as we support and acknowledge and support each other. That's by far the most important thing we can do. And my analogy is like we're like a large chain of unity consciousness around the neck of the beast, and each one of us is like a link in the chain, and we just tightening the noose, link by link around the neck of the beast, and we will automatically and naturally unite and become one when we've overcome the beast in the middle. When we've tightened the noose to the point where there's no more tightening to be done, that's it, and we will automatically all be united, and without any fanfare or hoo-ha.
Yeah. It seems like, there are basic universal principles that are necessary for a healthy society and environment, but it still has to honor uniqueness, and each person, following their own unique soul journey, as long as it doesn't trespass on another or is harmful, to humanity and the earth. Go ahead.
No. This is just to support that. This is exactly what I've been explaining in the Ubuntu philosophy is that only out of unity can you achieve infinite diversity. It has to resonate from a unity source, and then you can resonate out as many diverse activities as you can, as long as it resonates with a core fundamental principle.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess in many ways that's what Star Trek would call the prime directive. You cannot breach the prime directive. I call it the prime resonance frequency of source and unity consciousness. Once you have that as your source, you can have infinite diversity, but it all resonates with the primary source of creation.
Yeah. I think, too, I was having a good conversation with my brother, and he was saying, until people understand the dynamics of the ego, we're always going to have separation. We're always going to have these – he goes, "I don't care how many spiritual programs you create or whatever, you got to get back to the basic dynamics of the ego so you don't fool yourself, And I see that all the time, is that, there's spiritual ego, and then you get into – when it's critical, it goes into spiritual narcissism, but it's kind of like – it's amazing how you start falling into the separation game, and then I'm special, and then I know better, and then all these things just keep building and get amplified, and until you've your unity consciousness is just out the door. I mean, it's gone. Yeah. And then you just have separation and chaos. We're right back to where we started again. But yeah. You know, until we really go back to those dynamics and say, wow, is this, you know, like the Cherokee Nation program, you know, it says that if it isn't good for everyone, it isn't good, you know.
Yeah.
And we shift back into service and realize, is this good for humanity and the earth? Is this good for everyone, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been using that slogan with the Ubuntu movement. If it's not good for everyone, it's no good at all. And I think I actually heard you say that the first time some time ago regarding the Cherokees. So we've been using that as one of the slogans with the Ubuntu movement. And it works really well. People really love it. They resonate with that. And so thank you for introducing me to that philosophy. But it seems to be part of the Ubuntu philosophy that's already thousands of years old. So all the native people of the world seem to have that encoded in their DNA structure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, we need to bring back the basic, you know, indigenous ways. And not all of them, you know, it's like, you know, they had their wars and they had their disagreements and things like that and you know, trials and tribulations. But, you know, basically getting back in touch with nature and getting back in touch with the earth and again, living in unity consciousness as a tribe, you know, is really the way we need to go. You know, we need to just end this separation, this extreme uneven dispersal of wealth and the corporate greed that's running. You know, it's you know, it's insatiable, you know, the greed and the corruption, you know, in our on the highest levels as you move up the hierarchical power structure. It's just unbelievable when you get up into the highest levels.
It is mind-blowing. The ego that you mentioned is just so much more devious and powerful than people realize. And I got to just stop and check myself on a regular basis. You know, am I operating out of ego here, or am I still doing this for all the right reasons? And hopefully I'm still on the right path.
Yeah, I'm sure you have critics that would not agree otherwise, but that comes with the territory no matter what. And unfortunately, there is a lot of jealousy and, you know, a lot of issues, you know, in these programs, because you reflect back to people what they're not doing, you know. And so I had a master teacher once. He said, you know, I was listening to this kid talking to him, and he goes, I want to become Christ-like, you know, I want to become Christ consciousness. And he says, you do? And he goes, yes. And he goes, they'll hate you. You know. And he goes, what do you mean they'll hate me? And he goes, because you're going to mirror back to them everything they love and don't love about themselves, you know. And I think about that, you know, the greater your light, the more you're going to amplify the darkness in others, unfortunately. And sometimes rather than rise to the occasion, they want to pull you down to their comfort zone.
Yeah. Well, you know, while we before I forget to bring this up again, talking about the Cherokee and a nation and the Native American people, we are getting such an unexpected and unimaginable support from traditional leaders and chiefs and even kings here in South Africa and now even neighboring countries. That blows my mind. So I need to, especially next year, just take the whole year and just make time for really going to all these tribal lands and the chiefs that have invited me to come and speak to them and share this Ubuntu contributionism philosophy with them. And how to implement it back into their chiefdoms, because, you know, a lot of these chiefs are desperate about getting people back into their tribal lands. You know, they're begging Louise and I to come and live in this one particular tribal land close to Swaziland, which is, I mean, it's paradise out there. It's just so beautiful. So, and what's nice about it, these tribal chiefs give away the land. You know, you pay like $20 for a huge piece of land, and it's for life. It's for three generations. And that's it. And
wow.
So, And I believe now that once we can start implementing it in these tribal lands and bring our free electricity as a platform to initiate the community projects that, that then unite the people and start creating abundance because everybody contributes 3 hours a week towards one of the community projects, and they do so because the chief's going to tell them to do so in return for the free electricity they're getting. And suddenly you've created, you've turned what is potentially a wasteland, tribal land, into a place of abundance virtually overnight. And and once you've done this in one place, it's just going to snowball.
I agree. But, you know, our friend, we both have this mutual friend. We won't mention his name, but, you know, he has that device that actually takes water, doesn't matter how polluted it is, and it turns it into super oxygenated water. And it also generates electricity at the same time. It's like a, and it runs itself. You know, it's like an amazing situation. It just puts out a huge amount of wattage. And by the way, he wants to talk to you again as soon as you get back into town. So, but I mean, I know, you know, that what you're saying is possible, and I know where these technologies are, and it's just a matter of, you know, I guess the people rising up and making it happen, and actually forcing the leadership to fall into to suit somehow. You know, I think just the will of the people and people getting around this is going to make that happen.
Well, the other exciting thing is, you know, you mentioned exotic new kind of technology, which you and I know exists. This is not a, a pipe dream. You know, I stood next to this 1.2 megawatt machine and I saw it work. You know, next to CIA agents and people from Latin America, and I was just blown away at the simplicity of it and the benefit to humanity. So I'm very keen to pick up on that because that sort of died away after we returned to South Africa last year, and now we've got willing, you know, tribal chiefs that are sitting there with open arms saying, we'll implement this. They don't have to report to any government or any municipality or any authority. They can put this into their tribal lands and with immediate effect, and no one's going to stop them. So, and I trust that the native people of America can do the same. So I'm hoping then on this trip of the USA, we'll interact on a very high level with some of the tribal chiefs of the some of the Native American people, and just share some of the philosophies that we're doing here in South Africa, that hopefully they can get some inspiration from that, because I know there seems to be a high level of depression and stress in the Native American population that needs to be overcome and can be overcome very quickly and very easily.
I agree. And just drinking that water would take all the pollution out of their system, you know, you know, help them get back on track and you know, with their health problems and things like that. So it's just amazing, you know, the possibilities there. And I know there's several of them that I've been in contact with too, and we'll have to share notes, you know, that do want to implement this, and maybe we can all just kind of, you know, share notes and come together and make a few trips and see what we can do.
Yeah. But to start off with, you know, for people that might be listening to this and say, oh, it's all pipe dream stuff, you know, no one's ever shown a free energy device, if you want to call it that. It doesn't matter. We don't have to go with exotic free energy devices. Most of these towns and communities have a river nearby. And if they don't, we'll come up with a different plan. But for now, all we need to do is, like in our town, in our municipality, the four towns that make up our municipality, each has a river going through it. So we'll just put turbines into the bloody river and create 2 or 3 megawatt of power, and that's enough to run our little town. And that's it. Once we've installed the turbines, we'll have free electricity. All we need to do is maintain the bloody turbines, and the electricity belongs to us, the people of our town. Now, this, just for people that are still questioning the political motivation, why we're involved in politics, is because this is what, once we win the election here next year and we take control of our town and our municipality and the four towns, we will start implementing these simple philosophies and principles by creating the community projects and fund those from the municipal level. So, and implement the alternative or the free electricity devices that that drive all the community projects, get everybody to contribute 3 hours a week towards a community project, in return get all the things for free that come out of these community projects. We'll reduce the necessity for money in our town by 50%, 50 to 80% virtually overnight. So people will need very little money to survive and virtually immediately start to turn our towns into communities of abundance, not just self-sustained communities. And this is a critical thing. The Ubuntu philosophy is not creating self-sustaining communities. It's creating communities of abundance that export their abundance to all their neighboring towns. Mm-hmm. And this is where it's different from anything that's been done before. And this is why this contributionism philosophy devours and destroys capitalism wherever it finds it.
Yeah, we definitely need something, you know, to create this system. Now, I know a lot of people have a hard time understanding this, and we probably have to go into a whole nother show about that. But, you know, I always tell people, well, we do need some money, you know, to function right now, you know, because just because it's the accepted exchange of today's society. But we can also simplify and actually, you know, operate under natural law, and we will be abundant, you know, just like a corn. I always use that example. One kernel of corn will grow 500 kernels on another ear of corn, sometimes 2 ears, 1,000 kernels, and you put that in the ground, and it's exponential, and that's nature. But we've been blindsided by this uneven dispersal of wealth that's manufactured. The lack is manufactured, and until we can break that spell, you know, we're going to still be running that program. And I think that's what the Ubuntu movement is going to do. It's going to break that the spell of manufactured lack and you know, all the control programs, the draconian, you know, programs that are in place right now.
Yeah, that's exactly, James. It's the philosophy of competition that is just so evil. And we need to just, you know, beat that out of people's minds and psyche as quickly as we can. And when I say beat, I mean the beat with informing them with consciousness, or filling them with high levels of consciousness, and not physically.
You can't just get like an Ubuntu club or something like that, a shillelagh or something like that. No, I'm just kidding.
An Ubuntu frequency, like a sound wave, you know, just like blast people. And suddenly, you know, they go, whoa, why do I feel so clear about everything?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I always felt, you know, this is off the subject, but, you know, they're totally misusing the cell towers and HAARP and all these other things. And all those things could be used for good. You could actually start broadcasting, you know, the love frequency, that, you know, those frequencies that are harmonious and things like that, and turn things around. So it's like technology, you know, really isn't evil. It's just in evil hands right now. You know, we have to change
that. Exactly part of the Ubuntu plan is to do exactly what you said, is to turn all these instruments of division and control and mind control and frequency control, turn all those tools and instruments into instruments of love frequencies. And I know some people find that a little hippie-ish or whatever, you know, flower childish. But, you know, it, just take it for what it is. To use these tools, the cell phone towers, to broadcast frequencies that actually heal you and cure all disease. So you never even have to worry about getting sick, because we know what those frequencies are.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and Royal Rife gave us those frequencies. I mean, he had trouble because he had to put all of his cancer, you know, cells and viruses and things into a lead box when he turned his devices on, because it ended up, you know, curing all these things and destroyed his test subjects, you might say, or whatever, you know. That, and, you know, so he, you know, there's no reason why I think it broadcasted in like a 7 to 15 mile radius, some of his things. You know, you could go in the middle of town and, you know, amp these things up and turn it on and just, you know, take out these cancer causing viruses, you know, and take out, you know, a lot of the other illnesses. And, you know, you wouldn't need this big pharma program going and things like that. But, you know, we know who that would threaten, but, I think these things are going to come anyway.
Regardless. No, they will come. They will come. And again, if we win the election, and I believe we will next year, probably around this time next year, This is part of the plan. We'll take our little hospital in our little town and turn it into a world-class hospital with the most leading-edge technology, and start operating on those principles. Mm-hmm. And this is the beautiful thing, James. Once you start implementing this as the mayor of this municipality, you start mm-hmm. implementing these programs and these projects that bring abundance and prosperity to the people of your town. Do you think you'll ever be voted out?
No.
Exactly. So it's really just this one tiny little step. And if we can do this in our little town, and this is why I need to throw all my energy behind this town and possibly some of the neighboring municipalities or wherever else we have a natural, strong leadership that steps up and say, we want to do the same over the next 12 months in South Africa. Because all we need to do is win one municipality, and that's it. That'll be the end and the first domino to fall to bring in the end of this draconian control. And literally, it'll spread throughout our country. It'll spread across the borders to neighboring countries. It'll go across the Atlantic and across the Indian Ocean, and it's going to be unstoppable. We need one town in one country to do this, and that's the end game.
Awesome. Hey, we're coming up to the end of the hour. So what's the best way for people to get in contact with you to get, you know, get behind the Ubuntu program?
The best is to go into the Ubuntu Party website, ubuntuparty.org.za or ubuntuplanets.org, either or, and just join us. Go to join us. Don't join the news feed. That's something else. But actually join us and fill in the form. If you want to become more active in the political front, there's a separate form for that. If you just want to join to receive newsletters and be on our database as a supporter, then there's a different form. So it's very clearly spelled out.
Great. Awesome. You know, and also, too, I want to remind people that, you know, you'll be here at the East Eddy Ranch June 12th to the 14th. And they can go to privateinvitationeseti.com to find out more. Or they can go to eseti2015@gmail.com or esetireservations@gmail.com, either one, but to find out more about your upcoming workshop. And, you know, I can't wait for you to come back. I mean, we miss you and you and Louise, and we have a lot of laughs and share a lot of knowledge and have a lot of fun. And, you know, I can't wait to do this with the group that signs up for your workshop.
Yeah, I look forward to that, James. And just make sure that your brother is around, because I need another one of his famous treatments. I've never met anyone who is as incredible as he is with body work. It's just amazing.
Yeah, he's looking forward to it as well. But yeah. Hey, well, anyway, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And we're fully behind this movement, and see if we can take down this old draconian program and put something else in its place.
Excellent. James, nice chatting to you, and see you very soon.
All right, great. All right, this is James Gillen signing off. Have a great evening, and watch the skies and get behind this Ubuntu movement. Good night.